Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Rochelle Sparrow Psychic Connection, and I appreciate all of you listening in this evening. We have a really, really fantastic guest for our show this evening. You're going to find it extremely interesting. What I do is I'm a psychic trance channel, and I'd like to tell you a little bit about myself and answer a question from our audience today. You can find out information about me at www.rochellesparrow.com. I provide individual channel sessions for your empowerment, as well as group channel sessions and a relationship channel sessions. And what I would like to do is answer a question from Laurice this evening, who says, sometimes I know things, sometimes I pray or lay hands and people are healed. I'm having health problems, but I can't help me. I know I'm supposed to move, but where? I know I'm supposed to do something similar to what you do, but I'm not sure what or how that will ever happen. Nobody I know is like me. It's lonely here. I've been in hiding, so to speak, and I feel I may have lost what gifts I once had. Can you help me? And Laurice, my guide, states, you are incorrect to doubt any of your abilities. And it feels like apprenticeship energy is coming in, and it feels like mentor energy as well. Let's see. Okay. Thank you, guides. But I was going to say, let's see what they mean, and what they're giving me, it feels like somebody's around you that's a writer that can help you focus your energies inward into this special place that you need to feel grounded and to know that you're okay, not an aberration of humanity, but a welcome part of humanity. Understand that all of your abilities are correct in terms of healing, and it feels like Reiki energy, as well as similar energies that you can now manufacture and use, and it feels like for healing people physically, and I'm also getting physical, medical, intuitive energy in here. So what they're suggesting is I'm never quite sure in terms of where this information falls. It could be past, present, or future. So what they're suggesting is that you have that ability that you can use, that you can develop and create that particular gift, as well as writing. So those two abilities, as well as combining your energy with your mentor, can help you focus your energy. And they're saying that is what you need right now, is to understand that you have the ability to focus inward and that you can focus your energy outward and be successful. So thank you so much for that question. I appreciate it. And I'm sure our audience appreciates it as well, because we all learn from each other. And today, I have a wonderful guest. He is Chris Moon. He's publisher of Haunted Times magazine, founder of Ghost Hunters University, and a paranormal investigator. Thank you so much, Chris, for joining us this evening.
Well, thank you, Rochelle.
Now, tell us a little bit about you and how you got interested in this particular subject.
It's a long story. I can give you the Reader's Digest version. I had my first experience when I was 7 years old. My family moved into a house in Inglewood, Colorado. We later found it was on Indian burial ground.
Huh.
And I would wake up in the middle of the night to a three-dimensional shadow of a little boy standing at the end of my bed. And as this happened, I was terrified, and I didn't know how to react or what to do. And as you do tell adults, they don't really believe you. They think you have a wonderful imagination. So I had to really learn how to deal with it on my own. And over time, I really started to build a spiritual brotherhood with this little Indian boy. And he would pull pranks and do things that a brother would do. He would pull hair, and he would take tools from the garage and put them in the freezer and all those kinds of fun things. And, you know, the piano in our house would play on its own. So I grew up with a lot of this. And at 16, I really wanted to, I guess, put this all behind me. And I convinced myself that I had an imaginary friend and that all these things were just imagined as a child. And we moved to another house, which was about 5 miles west of that location. And the night that we moved into that house, I had more paranormal activity happen that night than I had in my entire life to that point. So I realized I either had to accept this or put it in the proverbial closet and try to make it a hidden secret.
Mm-hmm.
And I really decided that I wanted to explore it and try to understand it. And my true goal was to try to capture these things scientifically to show people what I saw and what I heard and what I felt through some sort of means that they could understand. And I played in a touring rock band for many, many years and had an opportunity to explore haunted locations around the country. And after I left my musical career, I took this more seriously and started working with quantum physicists and spiritualists and opened Ghost Hunter magazine with a partner of mine, and about a year and a half ago opened the online version of Haunted Times magazine. And as you know, we just went to print here back in October.
That is so cool. Now, obviously, you decided to accept this because you knew they were just going to hunt you down until you did.
Exactly, exactly.
The other thing that I'm wondering about is, didn't anybody in your family notice that these things were going on? Piano music is kind of hard to ignore.
Well, yeah, that was the situation. My mother was much more open to it. My father was really raised as a devout Catholic, and he put the blinders on, and what he saw was what he saw, and that was all there was to it. But with the piano incident, everyone in the house heard the piano play, and we were literally all paralyzed, couldn't move, and didn't realize that the other people in the house had heard it, including the animals, until the next morning when we were able to sit down and discuss it. And they definitely did hear that. My father actually did witness at one point a box that shot across the floor in the basement. So he had seen things, but he didn't want to see things at that point. And that's really the miracle that's come about in all this, is the fact that he was such a devout skeptic that he's part of the magazine. It is a family-run magazine. And he's still very skeptical, but his eyes have opened greatly here in the recent past.
So it's obviously, it sounds like it's a developmental psychological process that your whole family went through.
Exactly.
And for you, it became a lifelong mission. And it also sounds like, from the energy that I'm picking up around you, you're like a little magnet.
I definitely am.
You just draw these entities, and you're like your own little portal.
Yeah. And I've been told that by many people.
Yeah, it just feels like your ability just to open up to that kind of allowing those entities to move through you and down and around you. Boy, you must have had quite the experiences. So how did you come to find out that this was an Indian burial ground? Was that something that was shown to you?
Well, actually, when I was dealing with the spirit, I had no idea. I just knew that it was a little boy. And I'd only seen him from time to time, like I said, as a three-dimensional shadow, or as people call them now, shadow people.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of the time, I wouldn't see him. I would only experience what was going on with him. So what it took, really, was some research. After I talked about this, my parents had some experience. They researched the land and found out that it was Arapaho Indian burial ground. And that's really how that came about. And the funny thing was, is when they went and spoke to neighbors about some of these things, more as a joke than anything else, we found that our neighbors were having similar experiences as well.
Oh, very interesting. So do you think this little boy was trying to communicate with you? I've heard from a lot of different people who happen to be, I guess you would call them physical mediums. They're able to see shadow people. They're able to see entities from the other side. Do you think that it's a way of communication? Do they want something?
Well, I think so. And what the impression that I picked up off of the little boy, and I've really had to evaluate it over all these years, I think was the fact that he was of my age when he passed on. And he was really just looking for a playmate. And I believe he was earthbound and really was just looking for companionship. And an interesting follow-up to the story, I have an 8-year-old daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And when she was about 4 o'clock, I wanted to take her back to my old neighborhood and show her what it was like because it's beautiful. There's a creek and fields, and I just wanted to show her how I'd grown up. And we'd happened to be walking past, on a bike path, past the back of my old house. And the people there basically waved us down and invited us in, and I explained the story that I'd lived there and all these types of different things, but I hadn't told my daughter anything about it. And the interesting thing was when we got up to the to my old bedroom, when we were just walking around the house and investigating it, she started to scream. And of course, I became concerned, and I said, "What's wrong, honey?" And she said, "Daddy, a little boy's hand, a green hand, just came up through the floor and waved at me."
Huh.
And immediately it dawned on me that she's like a little twin of me. Her energy, the little boy had identified with her and thought that it might be me coming back.
Oh, that's sad.
So it was interesting. Just one of those going home stories. But
yeah, it also feels sad because I wonder if he's missing you. So what makes... I've had some experiences too. I used to work in a hospital and I was a supervisor of a mental health program. And this particular wing that I worked on, I used to see, was very, very quiet. And I used to see shadow people going back and forth all the time. And I became so used to it, I didn't even look up.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one particular time I remember in particular where this shadow person was going down the hall and I had my office door open and it turned around. I could literally see their shoulders and the head just turn and look straight at me. And I thought, whoa, this was a little bit scary.
Sure.
But at that time, I have the knowledge that I do now to try to communicate with that particular individual and to ask what it needed. Did it need help? Did it need something of some kind of assistance to be able to get to the other side?
Exactly.
So I'm wondering what makes these spirits earthbound?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And the one thing that I find that's really interesting about this, obviously, we deal with two different types of spirits. We deal with intelligent spirits and then the earthbound spirits. And what I mean by intelligent is the fact that they've crossed through to the other side, whatever terminology you want to use, and they're fully aware of who they are, where they are, things along those lines. But then we deal with the earthbound spirits, and those are the majority of the spirits that I communicate with when we do our EVP sessions, which is electronic voice phenomena, and capture their voice on recorders. We really work at spirit counselors more than anything else. And the number one reason that we find that spirits won't cross over is fear of punishment on the other side. That's the one thing that's become a number one answer whenever we ask, is that they haven't lived a good enough life. Their religious upbringing has told them that they're going to be punished when they move on, things along those lines. And we really have to go in and explain to them that there really is no punishment waiting. It's the fact that they are inflicting a self-punishment. They've kind of created their own hell at that point by cutting themselves off from our side and the spirit world. So once we do go through the counseling session and go back and forth recording their voice and answering their questions and vice versa, we're usually able to help them move through the doorway or through the light.
So they do transcend, and how do you know that? Do they tell you that, or?
They do, and I think that's the most rewarding part of the work that I do.
Wow, that's incredible, Chris.
Absolutely. When they come back and they tell you, you know, thank you for helping me move on, that's just amazing.
Wow, I really bless you for that. I've talked about this with a number of people. One of the things that concerns me, especially about the reality shows that are on television right now, is that I don't see that happening. I don't see people, the psychics that are involved in these shows, or the investigators helping the people cross. My hope is that they do, and they're just not showing that on air. But I really appreciate that from you.
Well, thank you. And right now, speaking of which, we've actually developed something that we call paraforensics, we're working with a Colorado police organization here on helping solve a 30-year-old double homicide that took place in one of the locations that we do our Ghost Hunters universities. And we are working hand-in-hand with that organization, and I've felt a very special relationship with the two girls who I've been able to help one cross over at this point, and she comes through much clearer now. She gives us very important information to help solve the crime. But we still have one girl who is trapped, and we're working with her right now to help her move on.
Now, what would keep a child here that's obviously a victim? What is going on in psychologically in her mind as a victim?
Well, the situation that she's dealing with right now is, I think it's a very Hollywood reason, but it does happen, is the
mm-hmm.
fact of the sudden death, the shock.
Mm-hmm.
Not moving through the doorway because they have one fear or another, or just being stunned and staying where they're at. And that's where she's at right now. And the most unfortunate thing about it is apparently she relives this crime consistently. It's almost like a loop that goes back through.
Wow.
And we step in and ask questions and try to help her. But she does, when she answers the questions, she's crying, she's screaming. And it's very emotionally and spiritually draining to work on the case, but it's so important that we get her to move on and hopefully bring the killer to justice as well.
Wow. That's incredible. Yeah, and I really feel compelled to offer my services in any way possible if you need help with anything.
We would appreciate that. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Feel free to call on me. That's just an amazing story. And I really feel for especially these children. Wow. So obviously she's being tortured over and over again by this situation, and she doesn't understand that she's dead?
No, she doesn't understand that she's dead. She really has no idea where she's at any point. She always sounds very confused. And actually speaking to her friend back and forth, now that she has become what we call intelligent, she says that she has no way to communicate with her. She has no way to contact her, and that it's going to be our burden, our responsibility to try to bring her through.
Hmm. Wow. That's an amazing thing. You know, it sounds like, from what you're describing, that she has post-traumatic stress syndrome, which is very interesting, because then, of course, it leads me to these new ideas that can carry on after life. And then I'm also wondering, when they do get through to the other side, and they are able to understand that they're dead and that they've moved towards the light, do some of those after effects carry on through to the other side? Are they relived in some kind of karmic, not as punishment, but some kind of karmic reactivation to help them heal from these traumatic events?
That's a great question. One thing we do talk a lot about in our universities is just that the majority of the spirits, even when they do move on, when they go through the light, they still carry many of the psychological issues that they have in this world onto the next. And apparently what happens from what we're understanding is that this really works as a ladder. Where most people think of life and afterlife, it apparently doesn't work that way. We have the life that we live in, we pass on and move on to another realm, and from that point, there's still a ladder that we need to climb. There's still another dimension that we're going to go to after that, another and another and another, until we reach this understanding or utopia or whatever the case might be. But it doesn't appear that there's just one side and the other. It appears that it goes on for quite a while.
Yeah, it's kind of like a never-ending process, isn't it?
Exactly.
So the Hindus are right. We just keep going and going,
exactly.
Like the ever-ready battery.
That's it. Exactly.
Yeah, that's an amazing thing. You know, I had, I think about 3 weeks ago, I had three people, it was amazing, in a row, call me, and they all had cancer. And they were all making decisions about whether or not to stay here or to move on. And this one particular woman in particular, she had her grandfather from Czechoslovakia come through from the other side and start talking about what it was like on the other side. And by the time that he was done, she was certain that she didn't want to pass over. Because the work just, it doesn't end.
Sure.
It just doesn't end.
Absolutely.
Now, when you're working, I want to get back to this. I think this is so interesting, this girl that you're talking about that is having such a difficult time. When you're working with somebody who is trapped like she is in this loop, and it sounds like her emotions are so intense right now that she's having a difficult time hearing you, just like somebody on Earth, that they're in hysterics, they can't take in what you're trying to communicate. Do you call on angelic entities from the other side that can perhaps come in and comfort her in some way that she can calm herself to at least be able to take in your communication?
That is a great question. It's interesting that you asked that. Let me take a step back and explain something very quickly about the EVP work that we do, because it's very tied in here. We do open air EVP sessions where we'll literally just take a recorder and do interview questions back and forth. We have been fortunate enough to come in contact about a year ago with a person named Frank Sumption who actually finished Thomas Edison's Telephone to the Dead. And it's amazing. We're actually able to have full two-way communication with spirits in a room. They use this device. We can speak back and forth. What isn't heard in the room is recorded, and we go back and listen to it. It's very much like Bible code, but it does work. And the one thing is that I think everyone has a different terminology for angels or people who help on the other side or whatever the case might be. And one thing that I ask these spirits, the ones who actually work as operators, more or less, and connect one side with the other, is I asked them what they'd like to be called, and they told me technicians. And so now when I do deal with spirits, and if I'm not able to have a full communication or if I'm having difficulty with communication, I'll literally say, technicians, please assist. And they will come through and speak to the spirit on the other side and try to calm them or try to push them in the right direction or whatever the case might be so that we can have clearer lines of communication.
First off, I'd like to know, the communications that you're having are obviously recorded. Is that something that we could do on the air sometime?
Oh, absolutely.
I'd love to have you back and to have our audience hear that. I just think that would be absolutely fascinating.
That's more than fine.
Okay, great. My second question to you is, are you able to communicate with the technicians?
Yes. Absolutely. And this is the fascinating thing about this, and I have to specify, I'm into paranormal investigation as far as earthbound paranormal spirits and spirits that have passed on. And the majority of the technicians that I speak with will talk to me about the other levels, about the realms, they call them realms, as far as the ladder that they climb. And I've had conversations with Thomas Edison. I've had conversations with John Lennon. I've had conversations with quite a few people that no one would know about. But absolutely. It's a very clear line of communication. And the technicians, when I do have the opportunity to have a full conversation, one session with just them, the things that they tell you are just amazing. And the one thing that is really intriguing and fascinating, and I'm not an expert in this, is they talk a lot about the circular universe and how it all works together. Which talks about beings from other dimensions and talks about how this life cycle works. And it's much bigger than I think anyone really understands, including myself. I just try to grasp onto little bits and pieces and really try to pick up as much as I possibly can.
Well, I'd really like to get into that because I'm definitely going to have you back on again. So let's just get into this stuff and take as much time as we need for it. What are they saying? Like, what are the tiny grasps of information that you have?
Well, again, I think the most fascinating thing that they're coming through and telling us is about the circular universe. Also, I know it's become very popular right now for doomsday people, but the year 2012 comes through very frequently. And when I asked them about the year 2012, and when the developer of the box asked the same questions, they always come back, and it's not an ending. They talk about a new spiritual beginning, about how there's going to be a complete turnaround.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah, and it's very common. It's this thread that they keep speaking about. They basically tell me, hang in there. 2012 is coming, and everyone will understand at that point. And what they've also spoken to me about, one technician in particular comes through and talks about, is that it's very important that I speak to people about spiritualism and speak to them about how to communicate with the other side and understand the other side, because there needs to be an understanding before the date occurs.
Yeah, and that's what I'm picking up as you're talking about it. There's a lot of telepathic communication going on right now between those who are working on the other side and how we are functioning and working as human beings and our understanding of ourselves as human beings to help us accelerate our understanding and expand our understanding so that we can move into the acceleration of 2012. Now, what are they saying? What do they mean by turn around in 2012? What is their definition?
Well, again, it is broken, but it talks about a new beginning. It talks about, let me back up a little bit on this. The one thing that they've spoken about over and over again is corruption. As far as state government, they've talked about world leaders, a certain church, things that have made this world corrupt, and that we're not living how we're supposed to be, that we're spiritual beings, obviously, and that we're very repressed at this point. And in 2012, there's going to be an enlightening. Now, whatever that enlightening is, I'm not quite sure. I have heard many times now, I definitely believe it is going to happen.
I believe it's going to happen, too. In fact, when I started channeling John F. Kennedy, so it doesn't surprise me about John Lennon and everybody else that's coming through for you, because I think they are coming through right now, and they are talking about what is true and what is occurring spiritually on the other side so that we recognize it as truth. But when John Kennedy came in, he came in a three-year in 2003, the year of his death, and I didn't quite understand exactly why until just recently. So now he's coming out with a lot of the truth of what happened to him about his assassination and why all that occurred. And it's not to blame any particular church or government or group or individual in particular, although he does name individuals that were associated with his assassination. But it's to put the truth out there so that we recognize the truth from both sides. In other words, there were certain responsibilities his family had in terms of his assassination as well. So putting the truth out there so that we recognize the truth, we don't have to deny it any longer, so therefore we can move on. And he also mentions 2012.
Interesting.
Yes.
Very common theme.
Yeah. It's just an amazing thing. Now, the circular universe. What makes that so important? What is that?
You know, that's the interesting thing about all this is I work with a quantum physicist named Claude Swanson, and he actually published a book that relates directly to the circular universe, which really goes back to Native American belief, I believe, in the fact that they really believe that every action has a reaction. That we're all tied together, and whatever one of us do, the other one will feel in some regard, some effect, whether it be environmental or personally. And this is really how it works in this grand scheme of the universe. Now, when we talk about the universe, I think we have a very narrow view of what's actually out there. And I think that there has to be some higher being in all of this that is responsible for this grand scheme and how it all works. One of my first experiences that I can give you with this is that I do a lot of spirit photography. And, mini orbs and things that come through. The interesting thing that I have is that when I take pictures of orbs or spirits, I don't just get the white light or the blue light. I actually get distinguishable faces within those orbs, where you can literally see the outline of a person or an animal or whatever the case might be. And when I was doing some photography, which ended up being a vortex in Atchison, Kansas, in the basement of a restaurant, I was doing this photography, and I noticed that there was human faces coming through, animals, and then suddenly I was getting these pictures of these large-eyed beings that were coming through, just like all the others.
And large-eyed what?
Large-eyed beings.
Beings, okay.
That
mm-hmm.
look a lot like people describe the gray aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And I, of course, I took this to everyone to make sure that I wasn't losing my mind. I usually have to have that test. But I wanted to make sure.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure everyone saw what I did. And they all agreed. They said, yes, that looks like an alien. And I started thinking at that point, like a little light went on in my head, and I said, maybe we're all connected. Maybe there's a connection around the universe, around through the dimensions, whatever the case might be. And Claude came into my life about 6 months after that and really affirmed scientifically a lot of the ideas that I'd had.
Wow. So that's an incredible thing. So you think the communication was, it's just that they're saying, I am present, I am here, we are all connected, all of these multi-dimensional beings exist at once.
Exactly.
So that's why you can see them.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Wow. Okay. That's an amazing thing. And what a gift that you're able to show that to the world. The other thing I wanted to get back to was you've had John Lennon come through. Now, what was his communication?
It was actually funny. We had a staff member working for the magazine. Her name was Lucy. And honestly, John Lennon was just a singer of a very popular rock band for many years to me. There was really no connection at all. And I kept getting this voice over the communicator, over the, we call it Frank's box, Edison's phone. It would come through, and it was an English person, and I kept recording the voice, and I wasn't sure what they were trying to say. But over time, I started putting it together, and it named this woman by name and said, he named her and said, I need to speak with Lucy. And I said, okay. So this was probably one of the most interesting spirit meets technology sessions that I had ever had.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke with him personally and said, I can communicate with her. Do you need me to get her to communicate with you? And he said, yes, I need to speak with her. So if you can imagine, it's a little funny, actually. If you can imagine, I have this machine working on one side. I pull her up through the Yahoo Messenger. And I take the microphone and actually put it to the box, and they had a communication back and forth. Well, after everything was said and done, she was just flabbergasted, and I said, what does this all mean to you? And she goes, throughout my entire life, I've always had John Lennon come to me in dreams, and I've been absolutely fascinated with him, and he passed on a very personal message to me. And, you know, if I wouldn't have been able to communicate through this box, there would have been no way to ever know this. And it was a message about her mother that had passed on.
Amazing.
So it's bizarre how it all works, but it was actually very funny how I was using a Yahoo Messenger to communicate back and forth what was going on.
That is amazing. But you know what? The other thing that is coming to me is that all of this technology is serving exactly that purpose. It does have that spiritual essence inside to it.
Exactly.
That's going to allow us to continue that kind of communication. You know, what was Thomas Edison trying to say?
You know, Thomas Edison, the majority of the conversations that have taken place with Edison have been with Frank Sumption, the developer of the equipment, where he actually taught him how to build that.
Yes.
Now, when Edison came through to me, I was simply asking a question, and I said, can someone on the other side let me know that I'm doing this correctly? Is there anything else that I need to do to make this more effective? And a man came through very clearly and said, my name is Thomas Edison, and you've been chosen. And in those words, I knew that there was a reason that I was doing what I was doing.
So this obviously, you have been chosen. You're like Neo. The chosen one who has had this lifelong connection. And obviously, it's a mission for you. It's not, it's a calling. It's not something that that you are just doing. It's part of your soul and a part of who you are.
Absolutely.
And it sounds like through your own development, you are moving out. It feels like television is going to be big for you, but it also feels like a lot more investigations with police is also going to occur. And back to the girl that was murdered, that's still here. Is she somebody that you work on a daily basis? I realize it's really draining, but I'm just wondering how often does that situation get approached? And it feels like also the technicians, there are more than just one.
Absolutely. There's, from what I can tell, there's several technicians out
yeah.
there who work on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Now, dealing with the person involved in this case, I would like to do it more, honestly. To get out and speak with her more. I do at least once a month go out to the Lumber Baron Inn where this occurred. And I'm fortunate enough to hold a class out there each month where I'm able to have full communication with her and bring in a group of people who are also interested in helping solve the crime. So there is a full communication that goes on through there. Also, I will go back on certain dates. I did go back for the anniversary of the murders. And had some amazing communication with the girls, including them opening a solid wood door on their own, which was just amazing to have them affect the environment that way. But I would like to make it more of a mission than it already is. But unfortunately, life stands in the way of that.
Right. But it does feel like there's going to be success with this over a period of time. Now, the other girl, does she move in and out?
She does. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's on request. When I spoke with her and asked her to move on, I asked her to, when she did pass, to be able to come back and communicate with me. And she has come through twice now as an intelligent spirit, very calm, very articulate, and she's brought through some incredible information. She also apparently has attached to my energy because now she'll come through from time to time when I'm nowhere near that location.
To give you information?
Absolutely.
That is awesome. Now, is that information you could share or needs to be confidential?
Well, right now, they did open the case back up, so it is a cold case now. Just on the information that we've been providing. So we have to be very careful in what we say
right.
at this point.
Okay. What experiences have you had with your Ghost Hunter University? It feels like there's been several unusual, to say the least.
Yeah, to say the least, exactly. we've had some amazing things happen out there.
Yeah, can you talk, first off, let's share with the audience what that is
okay.
so that people that are interested in coming, and I certainly would recommend it, not only because of who you are, but also because of your ethical stances, which I so appreciate. So I really would recommend that people attend one of Chris Moon's Ghost Hunter universities, which are held all over the country, by the way.
Yeah, they sure are.
Oh, okay. So maybe you could tell people about that, what it is, what you do.
Yeah, it's something that really developed on its own, and it's amazing. We had so much public outcry before all the television programs came out and things along those lines. People would read our articles in the newspapers, and they'd see little pieces on television about what we did, and they really wanted to understand what paranormal investigation entailed and understand what ghost hunting was. So that's really where it came into development. We started at one property down in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and performed the event there for about a year and a half. And basically what it is we bring people in during the day, usually around 2 to 4 p.m., and we teach a class called Ghost Hunting 101. And it's an interactive seminar where we go through a lot of the technical terms, a lot of the definitions, explain all of the equipment, how to use it properly, how to use it scientifically, and obviously answer people's questions about what false positives are versus positives and things along those lines. And it's a lot of fun. People really do grab a quick education in how to do this. And then what we do that night is we do a fun haunted history dinner where we go over some of the haunted history of the location and some of the experiences that people have had. And the owner usually give a little presentation on what they've heard and experienced. And my favorite part of the night, obviously, is the interactive ghost hunt where we actually take the students from that day, give them equipment, and let them go out through this building and lead a tour where they have the opportunity to gather their own evidence at that point and see how this all works. And that night we actually do an evidence wrap-up session, and they're able to see the evidence that they've gathered, the evidence that we've gathered, and ask any questions about it. And usually on these events we have one or two people who have what I call a spiritual awakening. We do preach the scientific end of things, but nine times out of ten, someone realizes that they have a psychic ability, an empathic ability, or something along those lines. And the great thing about it, like I said, it's a Haunted Times and Ghost Hunters University is a family company, and my parents usually go along to assist me on these universities. My mother is an empath, and when we go out there, she's able to counsel people when they do have their first experience. So it's always fun, it's always educational, and I think a lot of the owners of these properties will come back and tell you they get calls back from their customers who come and do this, that some of these events have changed their lives. And to me, that just means everything.
That is awesome. You know, a lot of people, I teach a psychic development class online, and one of the biggest blocks that people have is that people are afraid of what's on the other side.
And that's something that we deal with quite a bit.
Yeah. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. We deal with a wide range of people who come to these events. A lot of people come with a genuine interest. They want to understand. They want to learn. Other people, we call drag-alongs. They come with a wife or a husband, but they really don't want to be there because they have some innate fear of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, in one of the early Ghost Hunters universities, we go through the room in the beginning and ask everyone to give their name and any experiences they may have had and things along those lines. And one man was sitting in the back of the room with his wife, who was very friendly, and he was very closed, and he was holding a vial in his hand. And I said, you know, welcome, and can you give us your name? He goes, well, my name is so-and-so, and I think what you're doing is evil, and what I've done is I've brought my holy water to protect me against what might be out there.
Uh-huh.
So the interesting thing about, of course, you know, you have a very special case at that point.
Uh-huh.
But through the night, we explained to him that we're not promoting horrible things, Satanism and demonism and things along those lines. And that what we're trying to do is show people that there is hope. There's another side. It doesn't just end right here. And once you understand more about it, the fear that you have of the other side and of passing on starts to diminish. And by the end of the night, he wouldn't leave. He was so fascinated. He was up asking how he could purchase equipment and what he needed to do to take the next step. And you know,
we've converted him.
Yeah, we've converted him. And we get quite a few scientists who come to the universities, too, that really come to debunk what we do.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have an innate need to do that. And in North Carolina, we perform a university out there frequently at the Carolina Inn, which is on the campus of the University of North Carolina. And basically, we had a scientist come, and he told us again that he was there to debunk us and that these things were all rubbish and we were pseudoscientists and things along those lines. And needless to say, about a week later, he sent me a paper that he'd written specifically for us that explained the theory of spirits and how orbs moved and the trajectory and things along those lines.
That is so cool. That is so awesome. Do you think this is just psychologically? I mean, part of the process that when people grow and they're moving towards an expanded sense of growth and they start to work through all these energies or complexes or whatever psychological term that you want to give to them, that they become stronger in their energetic essence before they actually kind of, for lack of a better word, kind of bloom and die.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with you on that one. There definitely has to be a process, and it's interesting how it takes place. One thing that I've seen that's very interesting to me, we did a university down in Prescott, Arizona, at the Hotel Vendome, and we usually have young children through, I'd say our average age range will go up to about 80, but the majority of the people that come are somewhere between 10 and 40 is a pretty common number. And I noticed at this university we had quite a few older people, people that were in their senior years. And these people all came with a very unique purpose, and that was to learn about where they were going. That's the only way I can describe it.
Yeah.
They wanted to understand. Their entire life, they'd really lived in a shell. And they had a very narrow belief because they weren't allowed to explore any other idea. And talking to these people, it was just amazing, again, to see the light go on when you explain, this is how it is, this is where you're going, these are the voices, and you can hear them for yourself. They're telling you it's okay, and these are the things that you need to work out before you pass on. And it's just incredible to watch that happen.
That must be very moving for people. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if you had a lot of people that started to cry or started to grieve or started to react in joy, all sorts of different emotional responses.
Absolutely. The one thing that we do get, which is, it's the hardest on me, but it's the purpose I'm therefore, I think, is that we'll go through a university, we'll talk to people about EVP, and usually when you're in a location, you're picking up on the spirits that are present at that point, that are associated with the land or associated with the building more than anything else. But it never fails. At the end of the university and everyone's clearing out of the room, we get a few stragglers that come back up, and they ask us to turn on Frank's box, the telephone, and you find out that these people have lost children, they've recently lost parents or friends or whatever the case might be. And I think one of the most amazing things here is when a lost child will come through in their own voice and say, "Mom, I'm okay." And these people just break down, obviously. But
that is so awesome, Chris.
It gives them such hope, and to me, that's what it's all about. That's really what it's all about.
That is just so awesome. The work you're doing is so important. That is incredible. Wow. That is really moving. Well, God bless you, and God bless your work. And I really want it to be publicized out there on television. I really think that people need to see your work.
Thank you.
Yeah. That is really very cool. Now, I wanted to go back to, we just have a few minutes, and we're going to have you on again, folks. But I wanted to go back to the so-called whatever is dangerous on the other side issue. And my feeling about this, is, as I'm beginning to talk about this, is that it's not so much that the people themselves are dangerous, it's that the energies that have been trapped on this side, the frustration, the anger, the misunderstanding, the guilt, the judgment towards self, all of these emotions that would keep someone physically and psychologically trapped in this particular dimension also trap on the other side. And it's those emotions that the entities can't react from, which doesn't I don't see that as dangerous. I see it as a way of communicating to us in the only way that they know how.
I think so. Now, one thing that I do have to specify, just having experience with this, I let everyone know in the universities, it's very important to understand, I really believe that who we are here is who we are there, and vice versa. When people ask, you know, when you move through the light, do you suddenly become enlightened? Do you become a different person? I haven't seen that happen yet. I think that there's a new understanding when you move to the other side, but you still deal with spirits that have that intent, I guess you could say. Now, for anyone who's familiar with the work that I've done at the Sally House in Atchison, Kansas, I was actually physically attacked by a spirit there.
Okay, yeah, that's what I wanted to get into. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was actually burned from the top of my ear to the bottom of my neck. I've been bruised, I've been kicked, I've been beaten. I've dealt with several entities around the country who will do this. Now, it's not common, but there are several spirits out there who are angry.
Right.
That really do hold in that hostility and will lash out at you and do have the energy to attack you. So you have to, in any type of spirit communication, whether it's strictly spiritual or through scientific means, you have to be very careful because it is a dark alley.
Okay. So what do you do when you run into an entity who can be dangerous?
You know, when we deal with these spirits, it's really, they get us by surprise. As much as you prepare yourself for one of these situations, you're never truly prepared. But when you deal with these situations, the only thing that we can say is that we need to get out as quickly as possible
if
things start to occur. I have dealt with several people who see it a different way, where they'll stay and deal with the situation for a long period of time. And I think that's not just dangerous physically, but I think it's dangerous spiritually as well.
Yeah, because obviously these people, these entities, these energies don't want help.
Exactly. They're, you know, we deal with, and it gets into a whole different section. Some people call them demons. Some people call them unborn spirits, lower level spirits, whatever the case might be. I found the most interesting thing in hauntings, and this is something I'm working on for a book right now, is apparently when a spirit of someone who is not so good on this side of murder or whatever the case might be decides that they're not going to go through the light, that they don't want that punishment, they're going to stay where they're at, they have so much anger, guilt, hostility, that it actually works as a magnet for these other entities. And these other entities become attracted to them and apparently give them some sort of energy or power that gives them the ability to affect things in our world on this side. And that's frightening in itself. So you have to be very careful.
Huh. Wow. Yeah, that's really interesting. I didn't know that they could actually magnetize, but it makes perfect sense to me because we magnetize all the time energies to us.
Absolutely.
So that makes perfect sense. In fact, I would see that as probably a lot easier done when you pass on.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I really want to thank you. You've just been absolutely fascinating to have on, and I would like to have you on again. And I also want to share with folks how to get a hold of you. And do you have stuff on television? Is that in the works for you?
Well, right now we're working on a documentary.
Okay.
That people have been talking about a little bit, and I don't know if that's going to turn into anything further, but people can always catch up with me. Let me give my email address here. It's hauntedtimes@comcast.net. And if they need to reach us at the office, the telephone number here is 720-344-6150.
Well, thank you again, and thank you, Don Newsom, who's our producer. Our wonderful, wonderful producer. I love you, Don. And thank you so much, Chris, for being on our show this evening.
Thank you for having me, Rochelle.
You are welcome. And thank you all out there for being our guest this evening. And have a wonderful, blessed evening. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Bye-bye now.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.